Walter Brueggemann is a theologian and an Old Testament scholar who wrote a book published in 2014 called Sabbath as Resistance. Sabbath, he says, is a bodily act of testimony to alternative values and resistance to pervading values and the assumptions behind them. Sabbath is a bodily act of testimony to alternative values and resistance to pervading values and the assumptions behind them. Our stonecutter had been captured by the allure of power. And we imagine he was knee-deep in what Brueggemann calls the turn to commodity, the idea that is clearly resonant in our own culture that having more would generate well-being. Brueggemann's is a fascinating book, and I recommend it, but what most captured my attention was his reference to Sabbath, the rest time, the seventh day, as an act of testimony and resistance. We are talking about resistance, of course, today, the title of the sermon, Compassionate Resistance. It feels like everywhere we look these days, we see that word or some form of it. Resist, resist, resist. It's everywhere. We have been seeing it locally for more than 2 years as a function of resisting the pipeline, of course. And since the election in November, we have seen it proliferate exponentially. I went to a meeting on Thursday at First Parish in Brookline to learn more about what's involved in becoming a sanctuary church. And there was a huge sign on the wall in their parish hall, I mean, probably like 9 or 10 feet wide and 10 or 12 feet wide. And at the top, it had in big, big letters, Spectrum of Resistance. And then it had all these different segments underneath it, different topic areas, and then hundreds of post-it notes all underneath that. People had done a lot of work. And I looked at it and I was overwhelmed and I thought, I wouldn't even know where to start. And then I remembered Sabbath as an act of testimony and resistance. Start there. Collect yourself. Avoid the chaos. Fill your base. Start there. This has been another troubling week, we can put it that way, on our national stage for many, adding insult to the injury of whatever personal concerns we may be struggling with. Whatever side we find ourselves on regarding the wisdom or lack of it being exercised, the speed of it all alone renders us anxious. If we are to survive this period of time, of confusion and what feels like unprecedented divisiveness, if we are to survive with our hearts and our souls intact, we must recognize the Sabbath for that gift, that act of compassionate resistance to the chaos. And in recognizing it, commit to practicing it. It feels like we need this bodily act of testimony and resistance more than ever. Let me share with you a bit more about what my friend Walter Brueggemann writes and then take a slightly different tack from his course. Brueggemann sets up a duality in his book that we saw in our story this morning. His book, again, is subtitled Saying No to the Culture of Now. On the one hand, he talks about Pharaoh in Egypt, and Pharaoh's culture of frantic productivity and fear of scarcity, that what drove him was this fear of running out. He needed more and more and more, making bricks, building pyramids, working, 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 24/7. Over and against, in Brueggemann's thinking, God's commandments, right? When Moses takes the Israelites out of Egypt, they're given commandments in order that they trust that enough would be provided. and to seek regular rest in that trust. We can feel the parallels between Egypt's culture and our own. More is better, bigger is best. Produce, produce, produce in order to avoid disaster. The commandments intended to assure us that that wasn't important. Love God, love your neighbor, love is abundant. And oh, by the way, Brueggemann reminds us, dipping into the Gospels for a little bit of time, you cannot serve two masters. You cannot serve the spirit of love and money. You must choose, and Sabbath will help you break the pattern of the divided heart. Isn't that a lovely phrase? To break the pattern of the divided heart. We are still faced with these challenges. We still struggle with wanting more than we need. We worry about financial stability and security, often doing what serves us in lieu of what might serve the common good. But more than manna right now, more than the financial security that pulls and tugs at us, I think now we are in a struggle for our hearts. Many of us are so caught in fear and anxiety, in anger and urgency, that we have jumped on the boat and hoisted the flag that says, fight, 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 fight. And we are going full steam ahead. And I find myself wanting to say, wait. You will be lost in that rush. You will be lost in that hurry. The heart of you, the compassion of you, may get lost. Brueggemann at one point reminds us that the Israelites wanted to eschew Pharaoh and all his values. They just didn't realize how hard freedom would be. I think we are coming to see that, aren't we, in a new way? Many of us are concerned that our freedoms are at risk, that the present political climate will deny us the evolving rights and liberties that our country has stood for and worked for, imperfect and unequal as they have been. Du Bois reminded us earlier, of course. But we can only be humbled as we join the myriad countries who have struggled as well. Did we think we were immune? How is it we allowed ourselves that hubris? Brueggemann says that the faithful practice of work stoppage declares in bodily ways that we will not participate in the anxiety system that pervades our social environment. Not that we won't participate in the social environment, mind you, but rather that we will not participate in the anxiety system that pervades it, and more, that we must not be defined by that system. Sabbath, as an act of testimony and resistance, I will not lose my heart to this time. I will rest and renew as an act of resistance to the chaos, with compassion for myself and for others. A few years ago, I attended a conference on excellence in ministry. There is nothing like a conference with the title excellence in it to make people worried. The senior minister of the host congregation in Seattle shared a conversation that he had had with a Catholic colleague, the priest for a local parish. This was during the tenure of Pope Benedict. Before this pope, the former Cardinal Ratzinger, who was quite attendant to conservative interpretation. He was a by-the-books leader. The minister asked his colleague how he felt about serving his congregation with this ultra-conservative and restrictive news coming out of Rome, to which the priest replied, "It's not an issue for me. I know whose I am." And in a room full of Unitarian Universalists, you could hear the inhale. Whose are you? we wondered then. We can imagine the priest meant he had given his heart and allegiance to Jesus. And there were some among us similarly disposed, I'm sure. It felt like a push comes to shove kind of moment, however. How could we each name that to which we belonged? In the company of our non-creedal, non-dogmatic tradition, would we have the courage to even try? How would we each name the spirit or other form or energy or entity that we had given some portion of our hearts and souls to? Would we call it God? Would we call it love? Would we name it as each other? Was it the earth to whom we pledged ourselves? I think we in this time and here are similarly challenged just now to dig within and determine whose we are, each of us. You may find this an irrelevant question, but particularly when we are in collective states of uncertainty, of anxiety, of confusion, it can be very helpful to have a sense of one's base, one's touchstone. In this community, in this tradition, we have no need to have the same one, or even to name them similarly. There is no requirement and no test, but to be able to locate the spark for yourself, whatever it is, that awareness informs our compassion and thus our resistance. Our opening words this morning came from a story in a small book called Breakfast Epiphanies, by the Episcopal priest, the Reverend David Anderson. It is subtitled, Finding Wonder in the Everyday. How could you not pick that book off the shelf? Someday, I think I will create a series of book titles and just put them on my wall. Breakfast Epiphanies. I should have them always. In the jacket description, it says, he explores how the divine surprises us in these ordinary events. I so hope the divine, however we imagine that, can still surprise us in these not very ordinary days. That is, I hope we can still be surprised by life. Anderson tells the story of the time his church burned to the ground. Literally burned to the ground. He describes his despair. I wonder if we can imagine coming upon this place gone. They had to move their preschool down the street to the Quaker Meeting House. He describes a child tugging at his sleeve on the morning they opened at the new location. She was in her new pink dress and invited him to run across the yard. And even though he was wearing a suit and tie, he joins her to find the new playground and then play tag. And he says, for the first time since the trauma, I forgot about it for nearly 20 still seconds. He describes how every other moment, waking or sleeping, he smelled smoke and saw flames. But even 20 seconds in a place where we are free, which is another way of describing love, can heal a wounded heart. It was his Sabbath, running in a playground with a small child. And here's the thing he reminds us. He didn't get there by himself. It took her tug. He says, sometimes we can't get to that place by trying. We have to be pulled through the door. When I asked you a few minutes back to imagine your base, what came up for you? Was there a spark that regularly informs your compassion or occasionally informs it? And if one did not jump to mind, don't worry. Think on it in the days ahead, gently and curiously. Anderson offers us one thought. This is grace, he suggests. When an unwitting child pulls me into 20 seconds of fire-forgetting joy, grace is the mysterious pull from somewhere beyond my own little self. Only later, catching my breath, do I realize that I have been to another place and back. Only later, I would suggest, does he realize his time of Sabbath, of bodily testimony and resistance to the despair of his fire. In this time, when we may feel that much around us is in some form of flame, at the very least at risk to be so different as to feel unrecognizable, let us resist the pull to be engulfed by it. Let us not lose our hearts and souls to this time by turning only to fight. Let us also turn to Sabbath, where we are reminded of and renewed in another way. Let us inhabit with our bodies a testimony to love as the alternative, and a resistance that affirms compassion for ourselves and for all those around us.